Welcome to Season 3 of White Shores, the podcast for spiritual beings having a human experience. Let me invite you to walk once more beside me on White Shores to talk about the real meaning of life. Let's discuss dreams, rituals, intuition, angels, the afterlife, and other infinite possibilities within and all around you. Season 1 featured interviews with some of the world's leading scientists researching consciousness. Season 2 focused on honest practitioners, and the theme of this Season 3 is regeneration, rising like a phoenix from the ashes of confusion, pain, and loss. I hope every episode offers you much-needed comfort, inspiration, hope, and perhaps even a little joy during these challenging times. So, now the scene is set, allow the grey rain curtain of this world to roll back and all to turn to silver glass. Let's walk barefoot on the gentle, glistening sands of White Shores and pause a while to gaze at the horizon to see what magic lies beyond the material. Thank you for arriving safely on White Shores, a far green country under a swift sunrise. My guest today is a leading expert on emotion. He believes being a sensitive soul is connected to an increased likelihood of extraordinary or supernormal experiences and abilities. We have a really absorbing conversation, and he shares some fascinating insights and advice, and I do hope this podcast episode encourages you to seek him out if you aren't yet aware of his pioneering research and writing. I also hope this episode reminds you to cherish your sensitive nature. I'm guessing many of you listening to this podcast feel your way through life. You notice things others don't. Your heart speaks to you more than your head. You have gut feelings about people, situations, and places that often turn out to be correct. Your heart leads the way. Your dreams are likely to be vivid and intense. And you can't explain why, but you just know there is more to this life than meets the eye. You know that there is a part of you that is infinite, that exists independent of your mind and body, and it's this part that may survive your bodily death. As an aside, while on the subject of an afterlife, I've recently been watching The Haunting of Hill House and the second series, The Haunting of Bly Manor on Netflix, with their engrossing themes of time travel, dream hopping, undying memories. Obviously, the shows are pure entertainment and leaning to the dark side in the tradition of a good old-fashioned ghost story to give you a fright. From all I've researched about the afterlife, it really isn't dark or frightening, as is so often depicted on screen for sensational reasons. The afterlife is illuminating and wonderful, but it's also wonderful that such shows are drawing the attention of millions of viewers to the possibilities of what is invisible and unseen in our lives, the possibility that there might be an undying part of ourselves that can exist independent of space and time. Networks may do it in a controversial way to entice viewers, but anything that encourages debate about who we are is amazing and much needed in my book. I hope networks and authors never stop writing engrossing ghost stories for us. And I also hope authors and researchers like my incredible guest today never stop their quest for knowledge and understanding of the reality of our inner world, their desire to understand the part of ourselves that is pure feeling, the part that is invisible, unseen, and to risk repeating myself, the part of us that is infinite, undying. Please don't forget to stay tuned after this interview for some meditation music that can help unite the logical and creative parts of your brain as you listen, and by so doing, connect you to your inner world and bring you some much needed inner peace. It's played by my son and Royal College of Music scholar son Robert, who is also producing this podcast. Listen to it with your eyes open or shut, and as you do, let yourself feel every note. Don't hold back your heart. You are listening to the most famous concerto movement of all time, and it's famous and much loved for a reason, and that reason is because it sings in the language of the heart. Sensitive souls often get shivers down their spines when they listen to great music. And as I've always said, I think music is the language of angels. Yes, I know being sensitive and emotional is often considered to be a sign of weakness, but it really is the opposite. Sensitive is strong, the new strong, and this episode will showcase that. If you haven't watched CNN anchor Van Jones's reaction to the November 2020 election results, please do so. This has nothing to do with your political beliefs. Regardless of your political beliefs, you can't fail to be deeply moved and empowered watching a noble man cry, revealing his strength through tears. It's extraordinary. And on that extraordinary high note, it's time to meet someone who is raising awareness of the power of emotion, and by so doing, reminding us of who we truly are from the inside out and what truly matters in this life and the next. Stay tuned. If you would like to find out more about my books, warning, I'm a serial spiritual writer, as well as my features, media, mission, and talks, please do visit www.teresachung.com and subscribe to my newsletter for updates as well as free gifts and incredible stories to your inbox. If you have any questions, insights, or stories to share, please email me at my trusty angeltalk710@aol.com email, or message me via my author pages on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. I aim to reply to everyone in due course. Season 1 of White Shores can be found on the podcast page of my website, and all seasons can be found wherever you download your podcasts. Be honoured and grateful if you could leave a review, as it helps spread the word that spirit is real. Walking beside me today on White Shores is Michael Jor, a Washington, D.C.-based writer, speaker, and researcher. His expertise is the nexus of personality development, body-mind, emotion, and spirituality. Jor is a successful author. His most recent book is called Sensitive Soul, published by Park Street Press in 2020. And he is also the author of other pioneering titles, including The Spiritual Anatomy of Emotion. His research papers have appeared in prestigious academic and scientific journals such as Explore and Frontiers in Psychology Consciousness Research, Science and Consciousness Review, and the Journal of the Society for Psychical Research, while his features and interviews have run in popular magazines such as Spirituality and Health, Nautilus, Minding Nature, Advances in Body-Mind Medicine, Edge Science, Noetic Now, Psych Central, and Scientific American. Wow. And if all that isn't enough, he also blogs in his spare time for Psychology Today. That blog is called Feeling Too Much, which you may have noticed is also the title of his episode. So do check that out, and him too. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Teresa. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. And I'm going to call you Mike because we had a little chat beforehand and you said you were okay with that.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Mike, for being here. I'm going to plunge right in. You specialize in emotion. And at the end of the day, I think most of us listening would agree that feelings are what truly matter in life. And to risk quoting Patrick Swayze from Ghost yet again, what we take with us is the love inside. But right now, the world is experiencing such intense emotion due to the pandemic and what's going on in the planet. So what advice can you give to sensitive souls out there right now struggling to cope with this tsunami of emotion that recent events have unleashed?
Well, first, I guess my major contention and what I want to make people aware of, and I appreciate your providing this opportunity for conversation, is that emotion is far more central to our experience of being human than anybody ever supposes. And in fact, I think emotion is the core of what animates the universe. So in a sense, emotional upheaval is nothing particularly strange. I mean, we're living in bizarre times. But I think in some sense, to get familiar with emotion and to just appreciate it for what it is, that's what we're here for. So, you know, the times are indeed challenging politically over here, very, very bizarre, I suppose, over there as well at times. And I think for particularly sensitive people, the other thing that's really helpful to keep in mind, and another sort of core tenet of what I've been writing about and speaking about, is the idea where, Teresa, we're all human beings on a continuum of sensitivity. Some people are highly sensitive in some particular ways. Other people are much less sensitive and less conversant with emotion. And I think in some sense, they have, you know, their own difficulties navigating through the world, because feelings are really the most fundamental guide to how we're doing and how people around us and the environment around us is doing and how well situated we are in it. So, you know, everyone's got their own challenges. And I think for people to realize that they are not alone, for people on the thin side of the boundary spectrum, as I refer to it, there are particular challenges, but they're certainly not alone. And then there are people on the thick side of the boundary spectrum, or thick-skinned people who aren't nearly as have access to what they're actually feeling. And they have particular challenges. And we're all in this together.
I couldn't agree more. And as you were talking, I was thinking of that famous quote, people don't remember what you say or do, they remember how you made them feel. So, and I completely agree. But there's still a lingering perception, isn't there, that being emotional or emotive is a sign of weakness. And narcissism is such a key word at the moment. It's so strong and on the rise for whatever reason. Emotional sensitive people just too sensitive to counteract that tide of narcissism, which we're seeing almost overtaking the planet at the moment?
I actually believe that sensitivity is a strength. I mean, you can look at it pejoratively. Some people do. Oh, you know, sensitive people are too vulnerable and too open and too easily swayed and sort of not staunch enough. By the same token, the fundamental aspect of sensitivity is to be open to experience, to what's outside you. And while it can be overwhelming, highly sensitive people have a lot to offer the world. And I think in a time where it's sort of touch and go, on the one hand, highly sensitive people need to be on guard for being overwhelmed and to, you know, take it easy, take it carefully, but not sell their own perception short. When we're in a time of crisis, when we're in a time of upheaval, we need all different kinds of impressions if we're going to find our way as a society. And highly sensitive people have a highly attuned sense of the world and their experience in it, and even other people's experience. Certainly to be empathetic is key to surviving. If we're going to survive, it's going to be, you know, as a society, as a collective, and we need to listen to each other and be respectful of each other's perceptions. And no two people perceive the world alike. That is another core message that I really want to get out there. And you know, it's a given, I suppose. But by the same token, when you're in the thick of things, you often don't imagine that other people's experience can be, and their perceptions can be, very different than yours. And that's what we need more than anything if we're going to get through what we're facing now collectively.
Absolutely. I mean, being sensitive is wonderful in some ways to see the world through the lens of feeling, but it can also be extremely tough. I mean, I'm one of those people, like if I'm driving and a car horn goes, I automatically think that I've done something wrong if I haven't. And it's very hard when sensitive people come across people who aren't like that. And even if those people are maybe in the wrong, but their strength of their conviction, And whereas a sensitive person doesn't have that and will tend to sort of scuttle away, how can, any advice you can give sensitive people to have more courage?
Yes, I think to just realize that your own perceptions are your own perceptions, and they have innate value. And just because other people are dismissive does not mean your own perceptions are any less genuine or any less valuable. And I really think it's that simple to just realize that, you're not alone, that there are plenty of people in the world. All the estimates suggest up to 20% of human beings are highly sensitive. And while probably 40% of the rest are maybe on the thicker side of the spectrum, that doesn't mean their perceptions are any more accurate than yours or have any more value. So I think just to be confident in who you are and to realize that everyone is growing, and not to mistake another person's confidence for necessarily a more accurate perception of the world or a more on-target view of things.
Thank you. And I love the way you talk about it being a spectrum, and that it's kind of in there in all of us, because we the human race needs sensitivity and caring for survival, doesn't it? Because communities that take care of each other tend to survive. I think it's likely survived evolution, hasn't it, that trait? But let's talk about the spectrum. You talk about thick and thin. I haven't heard it described in that way, and I really enjoy that description of it, people with thin boundaries and thick boundaries. You've mentioned it already. Could you explain what you mean there?
Yes. excuse me, Teresa. The concept was developed by a guy named Ernest Hartman, who unfortunately is no longer with us, but he was at Tufts University and a psychiatrist studying people with nightmares. That was his initial study population. And what he realized is that people with nightmares, literally their feelings were spilling over into their sleep and awakening them and really intruding into consciousness. And as he compared people who suffered from nightmares with other people who he found barely remembered their dreams, and if they did remember their dreams, they were very pedestrian dreams. They were typically in black and white. They weren't very exciting. They couldn't really identify any particular feelings associated with the dreams. Very different kinds of people. And he elaborated this concept into really, I think, a very helpful, very useful idea of a continuum of people on a thin side of the continuum and people on the thick side of the continuum. The thick boundary people are, as the name suggests, as the word suggests, more thick-skinned, not in touch with their feelings as much, maybe not being able to identify what they're feeling in any given moment in extreme cases. Highly organized, tend to be precise, demarcate things, versus the thin boundary people who are typically very open, vulnerable, flexible, see shades of gray as opposed to black and white. And this concept of a boundary spectrum, I think, is very helpful because it helps not to pathologize things, that someone who has extremely thick boundaries, yes, they're way over on that side of the spectrum. Somebody who's extremely thin and highly empathic and even psychical is on the other side of the spectrum, but it's a spectrum and we're all on it. And I think that helps to tie us together and help people understand where they are without leaping to a value judgment, either positive or negative.
Thank you. And am I right in assuming that sensitive souls are on the thinner side of the boundary?
Yes, they are. Yeah, and there's a boundary quiz that folks can take if they're interested. My second book with Dr. Mark McCosey is called Your Emotional Type. And if folks are interested, it takes about 10 minutes. We have a distilled form of Hartman's boundary questionnaire. There's an 18-question version, and folks can complete it in about 10 minutes, and it's scored automatically. All you need to do is go to www.youremotionaltype.com, and you can take the quiz free of charge, and it will provide some insight, I believe.
Thank you, because people often ask me to say, am I sensitive? Am I emotional? How do I know? So thank you for that. But am I right in assuming also that people with thin boundaries, sensitive souls, they're more prone to paranormal, psychic experiences?
Absolutely. And you yourself are, I think, a good example, and the folks that you've talked with and counseled over the years. And that's actually the genesis of my research. If we go back to the late 1990s, I did a survey that ultimately was published and the results published in the Journal of the Society for Psychical Research in the UK. And what it demonstrated is that there's definitely a group of folks who are highly sensitive in a number of respects. They're sensitive to their environment. They tend to have conditions like allergy, migraine, headache, irritable bowel, and sometimes PTSD. And they are also psychically sensitive. They sense apparitions, energies around people. They see auras. And what the survey also disclosed is that there's probably, Teresa, a genetic component because folks in this highly sensitive category are more likely to say that folks in their immediate family have some similar conditions.
It does tend to have that. I've heard that before with the scientists that I've worked with. They talk about these genetic traits. It's fascinating, isn't it? What you're saying. So you're saying people who feel their way through life, sort of,
yes.
they're more likely to experience afterlife experiences, vivid dreams, intuitions,
have out of body experiences, near death experiences. These are all much more common for people on the thin side of the boundary spectrum. And I think there are good sort of nature-nurture reasons for that. It can be very confusing and distressing. A lot of people, you know, have written to me over the years saying this approach has really brought me some degree of comfort and assurance that I'm not crazy. because, you know, it's tough to confide in other people what these particular perceptions are. And yet they occur, and it's part of my supposition that we live in a truly emotional universe, that there are influences all around us that some of us have access to some of the time and some of us have access to more of the time. But I suspect that there's a lot more emotionally going on than most people perceive on a daily basis.
Well, then from my personal experience, having worked, you know, had the privilege of sitting with people when they're passing over to, you know, dying, it's emotion that's left at the end. In the most cases, the emotion that shines through when the veil between this life and the next is at its thinnest. And I love the way you describe this. So thank you, because it does help people who are emotional and having these experiences feel a bit more normal. Because I don't have paranormal experiences. I mean, I don't see angels or dead people or anything, but I have spoken to lots of people for this podcast or in my research who do. And a theme is them feeling very odd. It's totally normal to them what's happening, but they know that in the world outside, it's not normal. So a lot of time they hide it. And a lot of these people are very, very normal, but they just have these extraordinary experiences and they don't quite know how to deal with them.
Yes, a good friend of mine is a professor and he's at a Midwest university here in the US. And he teaches a class on religion. And he told me that he has opened up the class to ask people about their experiences of a spiritual nature, and it's remarkable what the students volunteer. And his conclusion is that what we typically say are anomalies and anomalous perceptions and anomalous experiences and outliers really aren't. When you start to talk to people, they open up about the kinds of things that they've intuited or that they've perceived in a very realistic way. I'm one of them, and these experiences are puzzling, but they're also striking, and they stay with you. And I think that they have a good deal of meaning. And so your ministry, in a sense, to folks who have these kinds of perceptions, I think is very supportive and validating and important for them to share.
Yeah, it's just data, isn't it? And I think it needs to be investigated as such. And I'm so glad that it is being investigated as such by scientists. And that leads me on to my next question, because we share a connection, don't we, with two doctors, Dr. Julie Byshaw, who you work with, and also my co-author for the Prem Code, Dr. Julia Mossbridge. How did you meet these amazing scientists? How did you encounter Dr. Byshaw's work and then Dr. Mossbridge's?
I think that it's simply an outgrowth, Teresa, of my interest in parapsychology and in emotional biology, which got its start, as I say, with my writing this paper and getting it published an eon ago, it seems, in the Journal for the Society of Psychical Research. And I have a hunger to know everything that you can know about the world and the way we are in it, human nature, and what this life is about. So and I love people. I just love reaching out to diverse people with diverse viewpoints. And I read pretty voraciously, and I guess simply as a matter of exploring the parapsychological literature, I became aware of Julie Bischel and her husband at the Winbridge Institute, and then Julia Mossbridge as well. And we've talked over the years, and many, many others. I have a list of every single day. I have a sort of an outreach list. Some days it's shorter, and some days it's longer. People who write books that are of interest to me, people who write the reviews of those books, and seem to have an interest in those subjects, I reach out and I just want to let them know what I'm about and what we might have in common.
Absolutely. And if you're listening, Dr. Bischel, of course, is the medium researching the scientist researching mediums scientifically. And Dr. Mossbridge is the precognition expert that I co-authored a book with. And what are your thoughts on these? These scientists are very brave, aren't they, doing this? I mean, it's not just those two, there's others like they're searching the investigating the noetic or inner world and
Yes, they are.
incorporating and acknowledging the role of feelings in their research. And that is such a big breakthrough, isn't it, for science, which
They're
tends to,
pioneers. They're absolutely pioneers. And I think one thing, Teresa, that science is showing, especially as we look at the progress that's been made in the last 20 to 30 years, the 1990s were 1990s were christened the decade of the brain, and at least in the U.S., there was a ton of research dollars that was channeled towards National Institutes of Health and all types of research on the brain. And ironically, I suppose what came out of that is an appreciation for the feeling brain, for the capacity of the brain and the rest of the body in concert to feel deeply about the world. There's a wonderful book by a guy named Antonio Damasio, who's a neuroscientist at the University of Southern California. It's called The Feeling of What Happens. And more consciousness research is alighting on sort of a bedrock principle that sentience and feeling is at the core of who we are. It's not our mental life. The neocortex, the thinking brain, is relatively new when you look at the eons of emotion. But the other parts of the brain that are much older are all about reflexes and sensing the world and feeling and sort of placing a feeling value judgment on our experience. And that is crucial. And also, when you look at the progress of medical science, chronic fatigue syndrome was derided in the 1980s and 90s as the so-called yuppie flu. But it has a real validity. People suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome have very definite, repeatable symptoms, and it's probably, based on a complex of nature and nurture as to why chronic fatigue grabs someone, why irritable bowel syndrome grabs someone. Migraine headache is much better studied. Synesthesia, overlapping senses like feeling a shape or tasting a color. So many people who are thin boundary have synesthesia, or vice versa. Almost all synesthetes that I know are thin boundary. And when I started my research, I had no inkling what synesthesia was. It was the people who responded to my survey who sort of turned me on to that. And science is much taken with synesthesia. My blog now for Psychology Today is moving into territory about out-of-body perceptions, and people with synesthesia seem to be much more inclined to identify and really empathize with other people, so much so that they can sort of they can have a mirror sense of the other person's pain or what the other person is feeling. It's quite remarkable.
It truly is. As well as the wonderful synchronicity of of knowing and working with similar people. We also share a similar book title this year, because I wrote a book called The Sensitivity Code, and it went out for a few months. It's a very, very low-key manual, a small, short book for helping people cope with emotional overwhelm, which is interesting. And after a few months, the publishers actually changed the title from The Sensitivity Code to The Sensitive Soul. It's, as I said, it's in a different category to yours, but I thought that was a real synchronicity. So I knew I had to talk to you. My book is very different to yours, but published the same year. So please, can you tell us now about your latest title, Sensitive Soul?
Yes, and what
readers can expect, because I'd love them to check it out.
So yeah, I love the fact that our titles correspond.
Same year as well.
Soul is a popular title in the publishing field, or has been for a couple of years now. One of the people that's endorsed my book, her name is Cy Montgomery. She is a journalist and a naturalist, and her book, which came close to winning a National Book Award, maybe 3 years ago, it was called The Soul of an Octopus. And she describes her experiences getting to know octopuses, not octopi, it turns out, octopuses, that they don't live very long, but they have a remarkable form of sentience. They're as close to an alien creature as you can possibly imagine. Anybody who remembers the movie Alien can probably identify with an octopus, sort of an evil octopus, but that'd be a good name for a band, by the way, Evil Octopus, but put that aside. So Soul is very popular in the publishing world right now, and rightly so. And Sensitive Soul, my book, is really about five different kinds of people with particular capacities, and the type of sort of soulfulness that we can intuit from their example. And the five types of people are synesthetes, as I mentioned, people with overlapping senses, people on the autism spectrum, people who are savants, who have remarkable talents like being able to identify the day of the week of any date throughout history that you give them, people who, children especially, who are gifted, who are prodigies, and children who remember past lives, and more generally people with psychical proclivities. These are five types of people that I believe are blessed with special sensitivities and special capacities. And the book really takes a look at how it is that they come into the world with these talents, and what it implies for the rest of us. And I really look at it from ultimately a spiritual perspective, because I think that there's good evidence in many cases that what a pregnant mother experiences when she's carrying her child will deeply affect the kind of person that that child becomes. There are lessons for the rest of us. And I really kind of wind the clock back. I talk about unspooling the thread to perhaps a time before we come into this life, and how we're seeded, how our humanity is seeded. So it's very interesting territory to plumb.
Thank you. And you're speaking to exactly the right audience now, because everyone listening, I can almost guarantee, is a sensitive soul. That's why they're drawn to this podcast. Mike's book, The Sensitive Soul, is an important, illuminating, but also deeply reassuring read for all of you. And I urge you to get out there and check it out, especially if you're feeling really overwhelmed with all the intense feeling out there right now. Do check it out. You've written a couple of other books, haven't you? Pioneering books about emotion too. Can you tell us a bit about those two books?
Yes. Excuse me, Teresa. They all have emotion in the title. The first one came out in 2009. It's called The Spiritual Anatomy of Emotion. And it really attempts to chart all of this territory as far as the emotional underpinnings of our lives and the emotional underpinnings of our interactions and the emotional underpinnings of the cosmos. And then the second book, also with Dr. Mark McCosey, is called Your Emotional Type, and it's a much different kind of book. The first one is maybe 500 pages and sort of sets out my view of everything under the sun. Mark's complementary view to that, and then your emotional type is really a self-help book. It's an outgrowth of the first. We didn't have enough room after 500 pages. We thought we really ought to have a separate book. And what we focus on is the kinds of illnesses and health conditions that people are susceptible to on one or the other side of the boundary spectrum. So, you know, we document that, as I mentioned, people with thin boundaries have particular kinds of conditions like allergy and migraine and irritable bowel syndrome. And people with thick boundary, who are thick boundary, it turns out, are susceptible to other conditions. For example, hypertension and ulcer and phantom pain. And Mark's unique contribution is, because his background is in complementary and integrative medicine, is identifying the types of therapies, the non-invasive complementary alternative therapies that work best for people with these different types of conditions. So that's the second book, and then that was out in 2011, and then Sensitive Soul, as you pointed out, just came out a couple months ago.
Well, we've spoken about what you do and what you write, but can we talk about your story now, who you are? I'm assuming you are a sensitive soul. You've already said you are, and may have often felt misunderstood. So what was the trigger for you to decide to do this research and writing? It's quite unusual, isn't it, what you do?
I certainly didn't plan on it. I'm a public affairs professional by day. Everything that I've done has been on the side. This entire venture has been sort of a sidelight for me, but it's grown over the years, and I've sort of thrown myself into it with gleeful abandon.
It's where your heart is, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
It's where your heart is.
It is. It absolutely is. And if we're fortunate enough in life, we sort of find our avocation, and if we're highly fortunate, our avocation is our vocation. It's not quite with me like that, but it's a really nice sidelight to have delved into. A couple of things, Teresa. One is that, when I speak about these subjects, and especially when I guest lecture or do book talks, I hand out the short form boundary quiz and have everybody take it. And then I ask people, where do you think I am on the boundary spectrum? And inevitably they say, you must be way thin boundary. And it turns out I'm not. I'm slightly on the thick side of the spectrum.
Well, you'd have to be if you worked in public relations, I would think. You'd need a thick
yes,
skin.
Yes, the slings and arrows. it helps. But it's also been a source of distress for me, because there have been many times in my life where I've wanted to know better how I'm feeling. Why am I feeling a particular way? What is it that I'm feeling? And it takes me longer than the normal person, and certainly far longer than your audience, to home in on what I'm feeling typically. Sometimes I'll know right away, but the deeper feelings are the more troublesome for me. So I've made emotion my study simply because I haven't traditionally been very good at fathoming what I'm feeling, especially the more profound kinds of situations. But the trigger for me, I guess there are two other triggers. One is that especially in my family of origin, there have been some anomalous experiences and some very interesting situations that have occurred that I've puzzled over. And then professionally, in the 1990s, I was working in tandem with officials at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. We were developing, along with the professional association I was representing, a guidebook, really handbook for people who own and operate commercial buildings. And there's something called sick building syndrome that affects many people. Hopefully not too many, but so-called sick buildings are when a certain percentage of the folks in those buildings feel sick and can't come to work, and then they feel better when they're not in the building. So you have to sort of be Sherlock Holmes to try and figure out what's going on and what affects people that way. But I began to get very interested as I spoke with people in their underlying sensitivities, because it turned out as I'd spoken to them, and I guess I have maybe the sort of personality that people are willing to confide in, and people told me that, some of them anyway, that they'd had whole range of experiences prior to those particular building environments where they were overwhelmed by the situation and they had to sort of sit something out. And some of them even went so far as to say that they had psychical or anomalous experiences at different times. And I got to thinking, maybe, yes, it's about the building and the way the building is operated and maintained. Yes, it needs to be done in a very responsible manner, according to certain standards, but perhaps also the individuals involved are a key part of the equation. And I know for myself, if I'm in a movie theater, hopefully I'll be back in a movie theater, we all will after COVID, I'm absolutely sickened if people around me are eating buttered popcorn. That smell is just appalling to me. And it's tough to abide. And I'm sensitive to it. I'm highly sensitive to it versus others who are happily munching away on their popcorn. So
it is infuriating that. I love movies. I know. It's one of the reasons I stopped going to the cinema. People bring a whole three-course meal in there.
Oh, my gosh.
It's just, stop it. I don't want to hear you crunching. I know. How can people find out more about you and your inspirational books and research, Mike? I will add this in the show notes, but could you just say, and also, is there somewhere that if people wanted to ask you a question, are you open for people to contact you directly?
Always. Yes, they can go to my website, which is michaeljauer.com. That's Michael, J-A-W-E-R, michaeljauer.com. And they can write to me, author@michaeljauer.com. Very simply, and I'd be, you know, very pleased to correspond.
Thank you. And I hope I think I may have mispronounced your name at the beginning. I said Jauer, didn't I? Is it
Everyone
Jauer?
Everyone mispronounces it, so don't worry about it for a moment.
I see Jaws there. You see that? Jaw is what you see.
Yes, no worries. No worries at all.
Apologies about that. It's Jauer.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Okay. So what's coming up next for you? What's your next project? I mean, obviously you're doing, you know, promoting Sensitive Soul now. Is that what you see yourself doing in the coming months? Have you got another project on the horizon?
Well, it has what I believe to be a compelling message, especially in these troubled times. Mm. You mentioned Scientific American. I put a blog up on scientificamerican.com at one time a couple of years ago. And I really talked about the boundary spectrum as being important for people to understand because it even has political ramifications. Thick boundary people are more likely to have a more rigid political philosophy and to look at others in a highly pejorative way, whereas thin boundary people are more likely to see shades of gray and to have a more flexible view of you know what's possible and appropriate politically. So we shouldn't be at each other's throats. And I think my interest going forward not only is to promote Sensitive Soul and the idea that we live in a fundamentally emotional universe, but also to somehow try to get people to realize that we're all in this together and we're all on the spectrum of boundaries and there's no one right way to look at the world. And as you pointed out, we've got to solve our problems together or we're going to all suffer the same fate, which is just turning off, you know, from each other and dialogue. And there's richness in the variety of experience in this world. And we need to really embrace that as opposed to run away from it.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I think sensitive souls are needed more than ever to bring some healing. We urgently need more compassion and kindness. And my message going forward, you know, I'll support your message as much as possible because I sense you're saying sensitive is the new strong.
Yes, absolutely. And your work, which is much more extensive than mine, you have 12, 15 books that you've published. I mean, you've been at this for a long time.
Oh, it's more than that.
There's
a Teresa Chung book for every. I mean, I think I'm over 100 now. It's mad. It's a serial writer. No, it's mad. I have been doing this for too long. And I often joke with my listeners and readers, I'm a serial writer. It's an addiction.
There's tremendous strength and continuity in that. And,
it's therapy, Mike. It's therapy. If I haven't got a book on the go, I've got too much energy. If I haven't got a book on the go, my family just goes groans and thinks, oh no, give her another book title, please.
Well, you know, it's great you mentioned the word energy, because that's also a recurring theme in everything that I've written. And maybe your listeners understand sort of innately that emotions have energy, feelings have energy. And to me, that's the key to everything, to all the anomalies, is what happens to that energy. Is it expressed in a constructive way, or does it go underground and then it becomes troublesome? And that's, of course, true in our daily lives. I think you can argue all of life is really hopefully a progression to understanding our feelings and other people's feelings, so that we have a more accurate gauge as to what's going on.
Oh, I could not agree more. And thank you so much for all that you are and all that you do. It's much needed. And I hope everyone listening checks out Sensitive Soul, published this year. Thank you so much. And I can't let you go before asking you for your spiritual movie recommendation. I torture all my guests with this. And I find it very, it's really mind opening, because you hear people's movie choices and how it informed them, and hearing it from scientists, doctors, practitioners, experts, authors. It's, you know, because at the moment in the lockdown, a lot of us are looking for great things to watch and to be inspired by. So is there anything you could recommend that spoke to you?
Oh, gosh.
It can be anything. It doesn't have to be related. It just be something that you found really opened your mind or got your heart.
Yes, there is a particular movie, and I'm trying to remember the title.
Who was in it? That might help.
Well, it's called Defending Your Life. It's my wife's favorite movie. And it's interesting.
That's worrying, seeing as you're called Jaws. Jaws in the title.
Well, it's a wonderful movie. It came out in the 1990s.
Okay, is
around
it still
the time that I was really gathering steam for the research that I've subsequently published and written? It's by Albert Brooks. He wrote and directed it. It's called Defending Your Life.
Why have you chosen that?
Meryl Streep is in it, and I have to tell you, Meryl Streep is a thin boundary person. She flourishes as an actress because she admits that she doesn't have very strong boundaries. She sort of bleeds out into the environment and gets all kinds of impressions from other people, which aids her in developing her characters. It's an absolute asset as an actor or actress or any kind of creative person. So she's in it. She's the guest star. But Albert Brooks, the comedian, is the writer and director. And it's about a guy who is killed in a traffic accident. And it's a comedy. So I'll just say that, folks, if they haven't seen it, it holds up really well over 25 years. It's really about reflecting on why we're in this life. And he has to, anyone who dies in his concept has to defend their life. They have to go before a court and defend how they were able to grow in this life to be able to move on to the next one. It's a wonderful movie.
What a perfect recommendation, and right up my street. I will check that out, and I know everyone listening will too. Thank you so much, Mike. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Oh, even more for me, Teresa. Thank you so much.
Thank you from my heart for being here and walking beside me in spirit on White Shores. Sensitive, kind, and compassionate souls like you, who see beyond the material, are needed more than ever today to help the world heal. Thank you to Clan Ree for the blissful episode music, and do check out the show notes for all details about this episode and my contact details. I'm going to say goodbye for now, with a musical or literary offering, a piece of heaven for you to take away and store in your heart as you return refreshed to your one precious life. Until we meet again on these white shores, keep being amazing spiritual you, sending my eternal love and gratitude.